I'm Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
Have you ever wondered how a book becomes a movie?
Or how a movie becomes a musical?
Or how anything is adapted at all?
Join us as we talk about your favorite stories and all the changes that were made along the way.
But more importantly, why? This is Willing to Adapt. Hi, welcome back to Willing to Adapt. I am Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
How's it going?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing great. Today we have some special news. We are finally, hopefully, going to have consistent sound quality on this podcast.
Yes, no more traveling studios.
Yes. Do you want to explain where we are?
We're actually in a soundproof booth.
Yes. I have a family friend who is an audiologist. Her name is Christy Mendoza. So this is a shout out to the Mendoza family for giving us this little booth to borrow for our little podcast.
Yes, thank you all so very much. This is exciting.
So hopefully this comes out great. And if not, I will edit it all out. All right. So do you want to explain to listeners what we are talking about today?
So today we will be talking about the book and movie Alice in Wonderland.
Yes.
And Alice Through the Looking Glass.
Technically. The book is actually called Alice's Adventures in Wonderland.
Yes.
All right. So this one I was excited about. I think most people know the general story. They definitely know the Disney version. Today we are not only talking about the book Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, we are talking about the Disney 1951 movie Alice in Wonderland.
Correct.
Gosh. So underwhelming. So, Romy, when was the first time you read this book?
The first time I read this book was probably about
last week.
Maybe 6 weeks ago.
For this podcast.
For this podcast, yes.
Yes.
So I started it, and
I'm surprised you haven't read this one before because it's very intellectual.
I didn't think so. That's why. I didn't. And even then, I have a comment to make regarding that later on in regards to the difference between Alice's Adventures in Wonderland versus Through the Looking Glass.
Sure. I read Through the Looking Glass a very long time ago. I did not read it for this podcast episode because it was not important enough to me.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Most of what we have to talk about is going to be from Alice in Wonderland. It's Adventures in Wonderland.
Okay.
But I read this book when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I can't remember how old I was, but I grew up with the Disney movie.
Okay.
And I think that's part of the problem, because
mm-hmm.
I love the Disney movie.
Mm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I think the movie's great. I will talk about the movie when we get to the movie. But the movie is different from the book.
Yes, yes.
And so when you come from the movie, the pacing is very different, mm-hmm. and there is a lot more in the book. Yeah.
Yeah, no, makes total sense. I think for me, watching the movie, because I had not finished Through the Looking Glass when I went back and watched Alice in Wonderland. And so for me, having watched it and then reading Through the Looking Glass, seeing all the things that I kind of wondered where they got that from, since I knew they weren't in the Alice, this is Adventures in Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting to see the how they took the two stories and merged them together. Disney didn't do a lot of it.
Yeah, I just remember as a kid trying to read the book. I think my dad really wanted me to read the book, but I was also interested in it because I liked the Disney movie. And I just found the book kind of boring as a kid.
Okay, yeah.
But again, you know, coming off the Disney movie. As an adult, I actually really enjoyed it. It's not something I think I'd read all the time, but
yeah.
I did enjoy it a lot more as an adult. So I'm glad that we did this podcast episode, because I don't think I would have read the book again.
Okay.
If not.
So this was your Great Gatsby.
I didn't hate it. It wasn't like you with Great Gatsby, like, oh, I'm not reading that.
I think I built up the hate in my head for that more than it really exists. No, but
no, we're going to be reading that one.
Yes, we will. It's on our to-do.
You can keep your eyes open for that one.
Yes. But no, I will say I think a lot of it was more along the lines of I might have started reading it some years ago, but I
You never had a class that made you read excerpts or anything?
The Jabberwocky. That's
it. Oh, with the poem, yeah.
The poem. That's the only thing I've ever had to do. But I think it was one of those things where in my mind it was a kid's story. And so that did not – normally things that have been kid's stories are kind of like poetry to me, where it, in the sense of that unless it's something that someone talks about and piques my interest, I probably am not going to go back and read it.
Sure.
I think I'm starting to change, especially with the podcast. I'm starting to change my...
Well, you've definitely been exposed to a lot of things because of these episodes.
No, definitely. But I think part of it, too, is that it's now opening me to want to go back and read or especially when I read a book. Mm-hmm. Like I read this book on the, I think it was the Romantic era poets.
Mm.
And after reading it, all of a sudden, I wanted to go back and read Wordsworth and Coleridge and some of those authors or poets. I haven't done it yet, but it at least created an interest. And I think especially with this, and I will say, I'll get into this later, but reading the second part, the second story, it brought an interest up of wanting to even continue reading a few more things after we're done recording. I wish I had time before the recording, but I'll probably do it more into more academic stuff afterwards.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I don't know, maybe there'll be something else down the road we can talk about too.
Many of the EU. There's plenty of adaptations of this.
Oh, yes. Yes, there are.
Don't know how good they are, but there's plenty of them.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about Lewis Carroll first, and then I will give a very quick synopsis of the book, if that's okay with you.
Of course.
Okay. Lewis Carroll, whose real name was Charles Lutwig Dodgson, was born January 1832, and he died January of 1898. He was an English author, poet, mathematician, photographer, and Anglican deacon. His most notable works are Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, which came out in 1865, and its sequel, Through the Looking Glass, which came out in 1871. He's noted for his facility with wordplay, logic, and fantasy. His poems Jabberwocky, which you mentioned, and The Hunting of the Snark are classified in the genre of literary nonsense, which I have never heard about until I read this from Wikipedia.
You never heard of Hunting of the Snark?
No, I've never heard of literary nonsense as a genre.
Oh, no, I remember learning that in high school. Yeah.
I think that's hilarious. it does point out that some of Alice's nonsensical Wonderland logic reflects his published work on mathematical logic.
I think I saw that more in the second one than I saw it in the first, but yeah, it does.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense, and we can talk about that a little bit, because do you want to talk a little bit about him before I move on? I have a couple things I want to say, but is there anything you want to say?
Let me hear what you say first, because we might have read the same things.
Well, I probably have some things you didn't come across because I watched some videos.
Okay, go ahead.
And I know that you don't look up videos.
Yeah, it's the Gen X in me.
So, well, what I was looking up a wide range of things. I looked up some things I read, but then I looked up some videos, you know, the making of and things like that. And I found many sources talking about Lewis Carroll and Alice in Wonderland. And a lot of them were from people who I'm going to very politely say have not checked their sources if they had any.
Okay, I'm curious to see where you're going to go down. I have an idea.
But I will also say I did find some sources that clearly were very reputable and were from historians and people who like I trust, like from Timeline. And
yeah, no. I will say what I do know. There has been a lot that has been put forward in the popular imagination.
Right.
And I think some of it has even, whether it's drug use or worse, that has made it into even some of the, like I have vague memories of really weird adaptations or versions. I don't know if it was of this or something else. Of like, I remember one that definitely had kind of hinted at drug use, stuff like that.
Yeah, well, that's something that we can talk about a bit when we come to the movie. Because it definitely plays a little bit into that. I will say, just as a foundation for what we're going to talk about, there are a lot of controversies and not really mysteries, but questions in regards to Lewis Carroll and what may have been going on in his head when he was writing this book. And I think, for the most part, a lot of them are just dumb. And I will go into that. I just want to say straight up, I think this is one of those times where we've kind of talked about before, where I think people look way too much into things.
I 100% agree with you, because the sources, what little I did read on background, did address a lot of the rumors. And I think a lot of it, and you see this a lot in regards to, I think we talked about this in the fable, in the fairy tale Sleeping Beauty episode, where we take modern understanding of things or modern issues and we automatically throw them onto the things from the past, mm-hmm. not realizing that sensibilities and even humans are just varied. And mm-hmm. we automatically, I think some of it is a desire to approve of the way society is today by saying, oh, well, we see it here as well, you know, even though there's really no evidence for it.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably what you came across. I'm assuming that's what you came across.
Yeah, I think there's, I think we need to get to it before people get confused. But there's that in regards to Carol. But also, when people look at Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, a lot of people are putting things into the work that are not actually there.
Yes,
a
lot of like people, fairy tales, they do that.
Yes, a lot of people try to come up with things like, and I found so many, my gosh, things like, oh, the Queen of Hearts is supposed to be Queen Victoria. And I'm like, just because they're both queens, it doesn't mean that they're one's supposed to be the other.
Yeah.
And like, there was even the weirdest ones were things like when the White Rabbit is looking for Marianne, who's supposed to be like his servant, who mm-hmm. he confuses Alice for. They're trying to say that Marianne is like the symbol of France during the Revolution. And I'm just like, I think you tried way too hard for that one.
So it's funny because the only thing, at least in the version I read, there was some annotation. And the only actual time they say that there was any type of actual reference, but it was unintentional, was in the original illustrator's drawings that he drew two characters to resemble two prime ministers of the time. But the scholars I read basically believe that it had nothing to do with politics. They thought it was just him using the same background kind of sketch in his mind. Mm-hmm. And part of it was because he was a political cartoonist. And so sure. he just
You're talking about John Tenniel, the illustrator?
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Well, and that's interesting because a lot of the research I found was saying that John Tenniel, who illustrated the books, his illustrations are amazing. Like, they're iconic.
Oh, yeah.
But he would illustrate them in a way that Lewis Carroll didn't actually see ahead of time. And so, like, even, like, one example is in Through the Looking Glass, when we meet Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Yeah.
Lewis Carroll never meant for them to look like twins.
Oh.
But that's something that John Tenniel chose to do in his drawings.
Okay.
And so people associate Tweedledee and Tweedledum as twins because of the illustrations, but there's nothing about that in the work.
So, which I've seen in a different adaptation.
Right.
They didn't look alike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I'll go very quickly into the making of Alice. I think Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, it is one of the most popular works of English language fiction. The story centers on Alice, a young girl who falls asleep in a meadow and dreams that she follows the White Rabbit down a rabbit hole. She has many wondrous, often bizarre adventures with thoroughly illogical and very strange creatures, often changing size unexpectedly. She grows as tall as a house and shrinks to 3 inches. She encounters the hookah-smoking caterpillar, the Duchess with a baby that becomes a pig, and the Cheshire Cat. And she attends a strange, endless tea party with the Mad Hatter and the March Hare. She plays a game of croquet with an unmanageable flamingo for a croquet mallet and uncooperative hedgehogs for croquet balls, while the Queen of Hearts calls for the execution of almost everyone present. Later, at the Queen's behest, the Griffin takes Alice to meet the sobbing Mock Turtle, who describes his education in such subjects as ambition, distraction, uglification, and derision. Alice is then called as a witness in the trial of the Knave of Hearts, who is accused of having stolen the Queen's tarts. However, when the Queen demands that Alice be beheaded, Alice realizes that the characters are only a pack of cards, and then she awakens from her dream. There you go. That comes from Britannica.
Huh?
They had the most concise synopsis, because there was no easy way for me to come up with one. The story was originally told by Carol to Lorena, Alice, and Edith Liddell, the daughters of Henry George Liddell, who was Dean of Christ Church, Oxford, where Lewis Carroll had studied and held a fellowship. They were on a picnic in July of 1862. Alice asked Carroll to write out the stories for her, and in response, he produced a hand-lettered collection entitled Alice's Adventures Underground. A visitor to the Liddell home saw the storybook and thought it should be published, so Carroll revised and expanded it, appearing at a time when children's literature generally was intended to teach moral lessons. The book at first baffled critics, who failed to appreciate the nonsense that so captivated its young readers. But Carroll understood how children's minds worked, and the way he turned logic on its head appealed to their sense of the ridiculous. In the riddles and the poems, How Doth the Little Crocodile and You Are Old, Father William, both parodies of well-known didactic poems, he reached even more absurd heights. By the end of the 19th century, Alice had become the most popular children's book in England, and within two more decades, it was among the most popular storybooks in the world. It inspired numerous films, theatrical performances, and ballets, as well as countless works of scholarly analysis. He taught mathematics at Oxford, like I mentioned, and he became friends with the Liddell family. And the bulk of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland were originally from a boating trip down the river with those three girls, and this is one thing that a lot of people don't get right sometimes when they talk about the origin story. There was another mathematician with them. Like, he wasn't alone with the girls. There was another mathematician with them on this trip. He was helping to row, and he was on the picnic with them. And so when I was looking into the research, they were saying what they believe, a lot of the mathematical logic and references to modern day culture were actually directed towards the mathematician, whereas a lot of the fantastical elements were directed towards the girls.
Huh. I did not read that part.
Yeah. And Lewis Carroll also included bits in the story that were kind of like inside jokes or inside references. And it was only things that the girls would have recognized from things that they've done or places they've been. One of the biggest examples is in the book, the Dormouse at the Mad Tea Party talks about three girls at the bottom of a treacle well. And that was a real treacle well that the girls and Carol came upon when they were on that trip.
Huh.
And you can visit it today.
Interesting.
So it's things like that where you can tell at least the first book was never really meant for a public audience.
Mm-hmm.
Until he revised it and expanded it a little bit. But the bulk of the story was meant just for the girls. And yep. then I think Through the Looking Glass was different.
Yeah, I picked up on that, yeah.
Do you have anything to say in regards to Lewis Carroll or the origins or...
No.
No?
Nope.
No?
I really did not. I read up on more of the controversial aspect of him than I read on him alone. And anything I did come across was more in regards to...
We can talk a little bit about that if you want.
Yeah.
I don't want to give it too much attention because I don't think it deserves it.
True.
But also, that's not the point of the podcast.
True. But I think that's unfortunately what I find most people
are interested in.
Are not just that, but it's the first thing they pop up. Sure. It pops up in their mind. Well, I think what happens is it taints the works because, yeah. Well, actually, do you want to start and just...
Sure.
Go ahead.
Unfortunately, like any person that engages on any level with children, there are a certain amount of people out there who like to think that those children were being abused by that person. And there has been absolutely no evidence that that has been the case in regards to Lewis Carroll. In fact, the historians and different people who look at Carroll all admit, on both sides of the argument, they all admit there was never a single complaint against Carroll in regards to children or families of the children or anything like that. So I'm going to get that one out of the way.
And that's pretty much what I was going to add on. Just to add on, the this is actually from Caroline Leach, a Times Literary. She's wrote an article in regards to him, a researcher, I don't know exactly what her degree and stuff in, but she's in the... This is from the Norton Class Critical Edition. So it's been vetted. It's not like from the internet. Mm. And she writes basically that there were some people who would say he had no life. He sought comfort and companionship exclusively through friendships with little girls and almost invariably lost interest in them when they reached puberty. Caroline Leach, in the article she writes on here, the essay, she basically goes through the research on him. And one of the things they did is they looked at his letters and they found that he, like in this case, out of the nearly 500 women or letters he wrote, 117 were to preteens, 152 were to girls between ages 14 and 17, and 225 were to women aged over 18, the oldest being 42. And that he often, like if you ever watch the British shows, you'll see the, what were they called? Not pastors or their, we said it earlier, parish priests?
Reverends,
yeah. Like they would accompany women on trips into the country and do things like that. And that's kind of how he did things. Is he often would accompany the different women friends into London who were married, and he would end up staying with his sister. So looking at the biography of him, his way of doing things and looking at stuff may have been different even then, but it fit the time nonetheless. Like it wasn't abnormal. And I think in our world, in our day and age, we like the sensational and we tend to focus on that. And so really, according to her, he wasn't that sensational when you look at it. Things according to our time, we would look at things differently.
We'll just start with what we do know.
Mm-hmm.
What we do know is Lewis Carroll, I'm just going to refer to him as that because it's easiest. Lewis Carroll was teaching in Oxford at Christ Church, I believe. And because it was a, you know, Christian organization and it was in England, they essentially were ordained, and so they had to remain celibate, and so he couldn't marry, and I'm sure he was lonely. But we do know that he became friends with the dean's family and the children, and they tend to do a lot of things together. But it was one of those things where a lot of the faculty knew each other and their families knew each other. And what we do know is, you know, other than the trips and the stories and stuff, there was a falling out with the Liddell family. And it was like right after Alice and the Adventures in Wonderland came out. Nobody knows for sure why there was a falling out.
Mm-hmm.
We just know that the relationship was strained after that and communication kind of stopped. And again, nobody really knows why. When apparently after Lewis Carroll passed and his nieces, I guess, inherited his diaries,
mm-hmm.
they ripped out certain pages from his diary. So we don't know what was in those pages. Mm-hmm. And there was a letter that was sent, I think, from Lorena, who was little Alice Liddell's older sister.
Mm-hmm.
And it was years later, and she had sent a letter saying that she was interviewed about Lewis Carroll and their relationship with him, and she basically said that she had to give a reason for why the family stopped interacting with him. And so she just said that essentially, I think it was something along the lines of like he was just too familiar with them, and it wasn't like they were uncomfortable so much as it wasn't inappropriate, just nobody really knows exactly what she meant by that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those things where you can read it two different ways. It's like a lot of the people argue that Lewis Carroll was actually interested in the older sister and that he might have actually proposed to her,
mm-hmm.
and she would have been a marriageable age and not Alice.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, there are people out there who think that, literally, I had one person I found online who spoke with such authority and said that Lewis Carroll had proposed to an 11-year-old Alice Liddell.
Mm.
And I'm like, there's no evidence for that.
Yeah.
Like, nowhere is there evidence for that. I don't know where you're getting that.
Yeah. And one of the things, too, in Victorian England is they also had, like, one author called it the cult of the child. And basically, certain people of the time idolized what they saw as the perfection of mores, of the innocence, mm-hmm. and the morality of a child. And so they tended to write in a way, or even speak at times in a way that saw, they were kind of fascinated with children because to them that was the...
It was like an innocence.
It was the innocence, yeah. But it wasn't necessarily anything...
And this is, I'm very aware that this is going to sound very awkward to modern listeners.
Yeah.
And so you can take this as you will. You don't have to agree with us. But from a historical standpoint, a lot of the sensibilities from the Victorian period were very different.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that genders interacted was very different. And the way that ages interacted was very different. And also, like, photography was just coming on the scene. And Lewis Carroll was a photographer. And so some of the evidence that's out there that people kind of throw against him, there is still an argument that kind of protects him. And so I don't think we need to strain this anymore so much as at the end of the day, there is no evidence against him, no matter what people say.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think all we need to really say on that.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. But, I mean, suffice it to say, he was nonetheless a brilliant man.
Mm-hmm.
And
ridiculously brilliant.
Yeah, especially in mathematics. And I'll, like, let's be honest, if you're brilliant in mathematics, no offense, but everyone I've known who's brilliant in mathematics is a little different.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that because I love listening. Like, I remember in grad school, I went to a philosophy conference with some of my classmates, and I got to listen to philosophers of mathematics. I understood nothing. I felt like a kindergartner at a college lecture. And, you know, they were amazing to listen to, though. And I did read, like, an intro book later on to try to get a grasp of what they were talking about with logic. And so we'll get into the second part of the book, but, yeah.
And those people tend to also be, not always, but these people also tend to be very awkward.
Yeah.
And a little socially awkward. I don't know what happened. I don't think anything bad happened, but, you know, nothing bad enough happened that history has turned against him. How about that?
Yeah. And unfortunately, society can be fickle when it comes to historical figures.
Yes, it can.
Today is a day to prove that.
For sure. But no, I think we can talk about the book real quick because there are differences in the book. We don't usually do this, but I think I'll do it now.
Right.
Who's your favorite character in the book? We usually keep this to the end, but I want to hear now.
Who is my favorite character in the book?
Yes, in the book. Because there's a lot more characters in the book than in the Disney movie.
Which story?
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say Adventures in Wonderland, but you can say either one of them.
So the Alice in Adventures in Wonderland got on my nerves a little bit.
Why? Every episode, there's always something that gets on your nerves.
She complained a lot, and I don't know. I felt like the Alice in Wonderland versus Through the Looking Glass were two very different Alices.
The film and the book?
No, the two stories.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
You're talking about Through the Looking Glass and Alice's Adventures in Wonderland?
Correct, yes. And so that makes it hard. I like a lot of the characters really got on my nerves after a while. I will say I liked I don't know if I can say it's my favorite character, but the one that's really resonates, like I think the one that probably I liked the most would have been the way they present the king. The way the king is written in the Red King is in the story. It's not like the, especially not like the Disney version.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit. As always, the bulk of our conversation will be when we talk about the film adaptation, because that's when we start talking about the differences.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. The king in... I'll just say it right now. The king in the book actually has more power.
Yes.
Because you find out in... This is a hint for later. You find out in the book that nobody's actually being beheaded by the queen.
Yes.
And because the king will pardon them all.
That's, yeah, at the very end.
So you find out that she's actually, like, all talk and no power.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the movie, like, she actually is a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would have to say, out of all the characters, that's probably the one I enjoyed.
King.
Yeah, and so and some of his lines. I like the lines of certain characters, but like the Mad Hatter got on my nerves.
Well, a lot of the lines are very clever.
Yes.
And I think that's why I liked it as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why when you look at it, it's not really like it is for children, but it's really for both children and adults. In that there is a lot in it that adults will understand and grasp and laugh at. There's so many so many really clever lines in it. Like, you know, a caucus race is so dry, right?
Yeah.
What do you think about politics?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you're wet, and we'll dry you with our caucus race. Or stuff like that, you know?
And what is a caucus, in case people don't know?
You can say that.
It's basically, it's like a primary. In a certain... So, for anyone who doesn't follow politics, when we're voting for our presidents especially, we usually will have... Some states will have a caucus, some states will have a primary. I really don't know the difference because California has a primary, so I've never really looked into what exactly their political.
But it's not that exciting.
Like. Yeah, it's not. It's
and it's not an actual race.
No, it's not. And that's the one thing I will say I liked, because I did a lot of underwriting.
There's a lot of wordplay with Lewis Carroll.
Yes, and it reminds me of those people that can be annoying sometimes. So I do this sometimes with people when you say a word and then you take it literally, mm-hmm. to kind of annoy them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
I love that.
I'm trying to remember about there the caterpillar.
There was a YouTube video where it was making fun of high schoolers.
Uh-huh.
And it was saying like all the cliques in high schools. It was like the goths and the jocks and stuff. And it said the stoners. But then it was people from the medieval period, like stoning people.
Oh, okay. I'm looking through the book right now.
My favorite character in the book is the Duchess. The Duchess in the book is actually the owner of the Cheshire Cat.
And, oh, that's right.
And she has a cook who overpeppers everything, and she has a baby that cries mainly because of the pepper. And she has a song where she talks about how she'll beat her baby because he sneezes and he loves the pepper. And it's weird. But then Alice essentially saves the baby, but then the baby turns into a pig.
Yeah.
Yeah. Randomly. There's a lot of things that happen with no reason at all, and I think it's just that whole when you read Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, you can really see how episodic it is,
mm-hmm.
and how it's kind of just a collection of stories just accumulated.
Yeah,
because there's no rhyme or reason for so much of it, mm-hmm. and things just happen.
Yeah,
and I really think it makes a lot of sense when you look at it from that point of view of Lewis Carroll sitting on a riverbank having a picnic, and he's like, oh, and then, you know, the caterpillar was smoking hookah. I don't know.
No, it does. Because there's another author who wrote two books that are connected that are exactly the same way, where the first one was just really a bunch of stories about this one boy that was put together. And the second one is so in-depth, people teach that book both in college and high school. And no one really ever talks about the first one.
It's like the Silmarillion.
Well, no, I'm actually talking about Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain.
Okay.
Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yes. They're very different.
They are. And if you read it, Tom Sawyer is very much just a kid's book.
Oh, yeah. It's.
And Huck Finn is very intricate when you know, especially history. And
We should do one on Huck Finn at some point.
That would be cool. Yeah. So, and I felt the same way with these two, with both Adventures in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass. The first one was very much, like you said, stories put together.
It's a compilation.
Yeah.
Yes. For sure. But the Duchess does come back later in the book, and her character's kind of changed a little bit for the better, because she was put in prison by the Queen of Hearts, and she was released because the Cheshire Cat showed up at the croquet game.
Yeah.
And they needed the Duchess to admit it was her cat, essentially, and like figure out what to do with it, because I think they're trying to execute it, but it was just a head, so they can't execute it because there's no body to remove the head from, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But then when, you know, of course, she gets there, the cat disappears, and there's this whole bit where the Duchess loves morals.
Yeah,
there's like no reason why I should like the Duchess so much, but one of the things that we're not going to go too much in depth on, but you and I are going to talk about it a little bit because you did watch it, is the 1990s Hallmark made-for-TV movie, Alice in Wonderland. And I love the Duchess in that.
I think because I combine, I remember more the introduction to her and that whole story.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because in that one she floats for no reason at
Does
all.
She?
Yes.
Not in the... And the Not live the action book. Version.
In live action, she floats. Yeah, she like hovers.
Oh, that's right.
She like hovers above the ground.
That's right. Yeah. I saw that. And
yeah, and like, she's that made for TV movie had so many big named actors and actresses.
It did. Yeah.
So I think she'd probably be my favorite, if not Alice, obviously.
I liked Alice.
I wasn't annoyed by Alice as much as you were.
Okay. I think in the second, Through the Looking Glass, she did not annoy me as much then. I felt like she had more...
She seemed like she had it together.
She did.
She seemed... And that's something that people talk about for the time period. Alice is a very strong female girl for the 1860s.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at other children's literature for the time period, which, again, they're saying were very moralistic and stuff. The fact that Carol wrote a little girl who was strong and pretty independent and would speak up for herself.
And if I remember right, in Ellis, in Adventures Through Wonderland, I'm just going to say Wonderland when I'm referencing that one.
Wonderland and Looking Glass?
In Wonderland and Looking Glass.
Yes.
When she's in Wonderland, or that particular story, most of his poems were actually parodies of moralistic children's poems.
I said that very briefly, yeah. There's a lot of references to real life things, but a lot of people, I think, we kind of said, look a little too much into that, I think.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a bit of a balance there, for sure.
Yeah, because I think a lot of it was more just him bringing up things. It's kind of like satires today. Yeah. He just brought up stuff that... It's like Robin Williams in Aladdin.
Yeah.
You know, it's bringing up stuff that people know.
I think
kind
it's...
Kind of making fun of it.
A lot of... I think...
Or at least referencing it.
Because, you know, like when the Mad Hatter says, why is a raven like a writing desk?
Mm-hmm.
Lewis Carroll on record has said there's no answer to that. There was never meant to be an answer to that. It was supposed to just be nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, to this day, people still try to have an answer for that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's a fruitless endeavor, people. Like, like there are answers out there, but you've made them up, you know? And I think the way that you have to look at it, at least for Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, is they were directed to the specific listeners. Either the mathematician, like, coworker, but mainly the girls. And so... When he does reference real life things, it's things that they would have known and recognized and appreciated in a story that was specifically meant for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas a lot of people nowadays try to look too much into things because they think that Lewis Carroll's trying to write something in a way that's like subversive or speaking about real life situations or people, whereas that's not what he was intending with this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think when you're adapting it, if you want to do that, that's you, but that's not what the original author's intent was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes we can read too much into stuff and not enjoy it.
Okay,
you know?
So here's a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What was the weirdest thing about the book for you?
There's a lot of weird stuff in there. Honestly, the baby turning into a pig. That one kind of freaked me. It didn't freak me out because I remember seeing it and hearing about it in past times. I know I've seen bits and pieces of adaptations. But that and then... Well, I shouldn't confuse it with the live-action one either. Because the baby in the live-action one was ugly. But I think...
Well, the baby in the live-action was like a puppet.
Yeah. And so...
I think it was Henson.
Jim Henson. Yeah. It was. And so I think that that's why for me the Duchess is not my favorite, is that whole scene was just like weird.
Mm-hmm.
Beating your baby because it's
I think I like the Duchess largely because of that live action version though.
Okay.
Because she's slightly more endearing in that version.
Mm, yeah.
Kind of like a grandma. All right. Well, I think we can kind of wrap this one up and then we can move on to the Disney film version, right?
Yep. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Because I think we'll talk about some of the differences.
Oh, we definitely will talk about the differences.
In the next one, yeah.
That'll be the bulk of our conversation. All right, did you enjoy the book?
I did.
You didn't sound very...
So, for me, I enjoyed Wonderland, but I got bored a little bit in it. And in certain stories.
Well, because there's nothing that really connects each little episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what works for this is when you think about it as I'm reading this before bed.
Yeah.
And so I'm just going to pick it up and see, oh, what's going to happen to Alice next time?
And that's kind of how I read it. I would read a chapter, finish the story, and then move on. And I think the only reason I can say I enjoyed Looking Glass a little bit more is because I'm reading it as an adult.
Sure.
I know if I would have read it as a child,
mm-hmm.
I probably would not have appreciated it.
And you actually read the book.
Yes.
Got it.
I read the book and I read the footnotes, which I think made it even more interesting for me.
Mm-hmm. I like footnotes. Mm-hmm. I listened to the book on Audible.
That's right.
And it was read by Scarlett Johansson.
That's right. I forgot you mentioned that.
And she was really good. I like her voice. She's got a good voice. But she did the voices of different characters. And there were some characters she did that I was thinking, oh, wow, you're good.
Maybe down the road I'll listen to an audio version.
Just for the fun of it.
Yeah. Plus, I read it out loud.
Oh, to your wife?
Sometimes. She usually would fall asleep. But yeah, I would read it out loud, especially just
like
the poetry.
She's like, please, Romy, no.
No, she appreciated it. It was usually just at night as she was falling asleep anyway.
Sure. Next time on Willing to Adapt, we're going to talk about the 1951 Walt Disney film. I did not realize that this film did not do well when it came out.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't read that part.
This film was a critical and financial failure, essentially. He did not care if there were many changes to the story, as long as it had the feel of the story and included the fantastical elements of the original story. In that it still feels like an Alice story, just a different shade of that story, if that makes sense.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Willing to Adapt.
Please like and subscribe. Maybe leave a review or just share us with friends and family.
We would also love if you would follow us on social media.
If you have ideas for future episodes for us, please email us at ericandromy@willingtoadapt.com.
That's Romy with an I.
And remember, when the only thing constant in life is change, be willing to adapt.